Hey, it's Melvin, one of your friendly neighborhood podcast hosts. Whether it's your first time tuning in or you're a longtime listener, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever. Reviews are the lifeblood of the podcast world, so if you want to help us out, it'll take only a moment of your time. Otherwise, we hope you enjoy the show. You're listening to Cinematic Doctrine. I think that's a good time to transition. Hey, if you just press play, you're missing out on 30 minutes of content where me and Melanie, the two of us, we talked about. So Melanie didn't really know much about the behind the scenes stuff that was going on over the last year with DC, not specifically the Ezra Miller stuff, although that seems to be the most
that people knows about that.
Yeah, that was wild. hope that they're doing well, hope that they're being cared for. But I was specifically letting them know about like how basically Shazam 2 might not matter because the whole canon is changing and actors might change and storylines might change and all
makes
that stuff.
No sense.
And we got into stuff like, will we miss any of this stuff? Will we miss any of the characters, any of the stories that are being set up, of which Shazam 2 also has some stories being set up? And so it's just a really interesting time to be in when it comes to superhero fans, because Marvel has never been so dysfunctional that it needed to do a total rework or rewrite. And I know, right, of course, this is pretty familiar in the comic world. DC itself in the comic world has just done, I mean, New 52 was its own thing, and then Rebirth came out, and so like they've jumped canons before. They have Elseworlds. They've done it before, but movies, it's very different. So we talk about that for about 30 minutes, and you get access to that only if you support on Patreon. You can support for as little as $3 a month, and you get all kinds of uncut content, not just at the beginning of the episode, but sometimes as I'm editing, I'm cutting stuff that really just pushes the length of the episode to a point that I feel is too long as a listener, because I listen to podcasts too, so I would prefer them to be a little snappier sometimes. That's not to say it's bad content I'm cutting. Usually it's pretty good content or interesting, but it's stuff that's extra. So if you really enjoy what we have to say or what we get into, there's not just stuff in the beginning, like the 30 minutes in here, but also stuff later. There's other benefits to supporting on Patreon. It's patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine. You get all kinds of stuff, and you'll hear about that as you're listening to this episode. You also hear about it, or you read about it if you jump onto Patreon. But no, we're here to talk about Shazam 2, not to continually talk about how you should support on Patreon, which would be really cool if you did. And we're going to get into Shazam 2 Fury of the Gods, which is DC's next movie after Black Adam. And which Black Adam did not do well. We, of course, did an episode on it where me and Dan kind of didn't hate it, but recognized it for its lack of quality and explained some of that in more detail. But Melanie, we are getting into Shazam. Did you want to introduce like the I don't know, complicating incident? Like, how does this movie start? Like, what is Shazam 2 about?
So I'm going to, you know, I usually like to watch a film, pause it if I'm going to like do stuff like this. But seeing as, you know, you can't do that in a movie theater, I'll do my best. So you have the staff thingy. I don't know what it's called. Do you remember?
You're doing great.
Awesome. So in the first film, there was like this staff that imbued whoever, you know, says the name Shazam with the powers of Shazam. And so if you remember from the last film, our main character, Shazam, broke it to stop some evil guy from using it to gain his powers. Mm-hmm. So the film picks up where the staff has actually been found, and it's in this museum, and it actually, you know, there's a lot of lore and history surrounding it. But then these two people come in and they end up stealing the staff and killing a bunch of people. And you find out that later on that these are the daughters of
Atlas, I believe.
Thank you.
Specifically Atlas, not Zeus.
Yes. Yeah. Just Atlas. Mm-hmm. The daughters of Atlas, who are seeking to restore their home and their powers that were taken from them by the Council of Wizards a long time ago. And so, you know, who they're after next. So they've got the staff and now they're going to be after Shazam and his family so that they can take their powers back as well. So that's kind of like how the story starts. And then, you know, flash over to Shazam in a therapy, quote unquote, therapy session, you know, just having his own struggles, like trying to figure out like how he can keep his family together and how that's just a really big thing that's been weighing on him as he feels like everyone's walking away and doing their own thing. And he just wants to keep his family together and for all of them to continue to be heroes together. So that's kind of like the beginning of the film. I don't know if you would add anything else, Melvin.
So if you're a fan of our show, you know that routinely we mention Shazam, not routinely, but whenever we do mention Shazam, the first movie, it's always in a positive light as being like one of the DC movies that's good.
Oh yeah. And it's definitely like, one of the best for sure.
If not the best, it has a really good sense of focus. It's got some creativity. A lot of people compared it to having the same sensibility as the Raimi Spider-Man movies in that it's like fun.
That makes sense.
It embraces the joy of like the powers that they have.
Yes. And it doesn't take itself too seriously. I find there's just there's a lot of warmth to it and a lot of joy and some fun surprises too.
And it's like meta because it's the fantasy of your kid who becomes a superhero.
Yes.
And so they play that up and like, one of the best scenes is, can I have, or we'd like to order six or five of your favorite, I can't even remember it, but it's
something like when your he goes finest in to
get
beer. Beers.
Yeah. We'd like to get your finest beer, please. And it's like, that is, you moron. Like, you don't drink at all. Like, it's so stupid. But like, that's sort of like, yeah, I could turn into a superhero. I guess I'll go do things that adults do. Like, it's from what a child thinks adults would do. And so the movie's not just enjoyable, but it's funny. And it's just really, I would say, consistently enjoyable and well-made.
Definitely.
It's got some scary scenes, which I think is a positive to a superhero movie. These people have superpowers. Yeah. They should be, quite frankly, quite terrifying. It's one of the reasons I think Invincible as an animated superhero show works so well is that if you have a superpowered person punching a human being, the human being should be obliterated.
Exactly. So, this is what it's going to look like. It's not going to be they just fly across the room.
Yeah.
They're going to completely just be like a puddle of goo.
Yeah. Like, and while Shazam never gets like that violent, there are terrifying scenes where these seven deadly sins as monsters are like attacking like a boardroom. It's very fun. Very scary, very fun. So Shazam is just a really good movie. And so
did you find that first scene like really scary? Like when in Shazam 2, Lucy Liu's character Calypso, where she's like her power is like chaos. So she starts like whispering stuff to some guy and then he whispers it to somebody else. And they're not really like zombies per se, like they're not really eating anybody, they're kind of
like
just
a super creepy virus that like they pass on the chaos to the next person.
I didn't know if you found that as scary or just confusing.
I thought it was pretty cool. I thought so like jumping from Shazam to Shazam 2, like I'm familiar with David Sandberg's work. I really enjoy his short films. I've seen probably like four or five of them. He's the guy very popularized over his project Lights Out, which is like a 3-minute short film. It's very good and very scary. It's just a woman is walking down the hallway and turns the light down in the hallway, light off in the hallway, and a figure appears at the end.
Yeah.
And then she turns the light on and the figure's
gone.
Didn't
they make it like a whole movie?
So then, it got picked up for a film.
Oh, got it.
The film is, but it shows promise.
Yeah.
And I've seen his Annabelle movie, and it's very fun. It's very well made, good performances. And then, of course, Shazam's good. So Sandberg is good at what he does. And then if you're familiar with Sandberg, too, he has a YouTube channel called Pony Smasher, where he talks about the process of filmmaking. And it's very, very interesting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he has one where he talks about Shazam and like, there was one series where he talked about special effects or really the experience of being a filmmaker and then having people talk about your movie online. So there's one scene in Shazam where Shazam is learning to fly and he's in a mall and there's people in the background just standing around. And Sandberg brings up like that some people criticized that as like, why are these people standing around? There's someone flying in the mall. Shouldn't they be reacting? And then Sandberg just reveals, actually, we shoot the scene. You go into post-production and then you realize, oh no, some of the crew are in the shot just standing there doing nothing. And he goes, okay, I guess I'll call up a special effects team and ask them to just edit in some like shopping bags to make it look like they're just passersby who didn't notice. And
I'm gonna look for that now.
it's super informative.
Oh, cool.
So like all these really interesting insights into the filmmaking process. And in that particular video, he talks exclusively about like problem solving. Like you're making a film over the course of like a month or two, and then you're doing pre and post production, which are also could be up to a couple months. And throughout the entire process, as a friend of mine who makes short films has said, you have three different movies: the movie you want to make, the movie you shoot, and then the movie you're working on.
Yeah.
And it's all different.
That makes sense.
And you have to separate them all. You may not know this, but the easiest way you can show your support for Cinematic Doctrine is to rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. So press pause and share your thoughts. We'd love to hear what you have to say. And then press play again so you can hear the rest of the show. So I've enjoyed his projects. I enjoy him. I enjoy that in everything he does, his wife gets killed, which I think is very funny, except for in Shazam 2. She survives. But she's the same character who... She's not the same character, but she is in Shazam 1. She's the woman who touches the door that I think his name is Mark Strong, the actor. Mark Strong wants to get like special powers.
Oh, and then she like disintegrates because she's like, this isn't real. Yeah. And then it's like...
Yeah, it's awesome.
That and, was
like,
really
so she's
cool.
Supposed to be dead, but then in Shazam 2, she's in an orange car that's about to fall off a bridge, which I just thought
was
really
funny. Oh my gosh, I didn't even notice.
Yeah,
that's
it's her.
So funny.
The second she was on screen, I was like, yeah, she's going to die
awesome.
Again. And then she doesn't.
Oh, that's so funny.
Only for Sandberg to get carried off by a harpy and die, which I thought was pretty funny.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Swapped. But all that to say is Sandberg, I enjoy his work. I think he's a very enjoyable guy. He seems like a chill dude, too. He seems comfortable with criticism. There's some interesting stuff he said on Twitter that's really good. But Shazam 2, I liked it. I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was an okay movie. I was surprised to find that on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a 53% score. That's not terrible. But that just means there's a decent amount of people who are not enjoying it. Many of which you were comparing it to the first one. Yes, the first one is better, but two kind of felt like if it was refined a little better, could have been more enjoyable.
Yeah, I think so too.
It seems like a movie that was cut down, like it could have been a little longer, but I'm comfortable that it was not longer, although I could see a better cut if it had a couple more scenes, because it really sets up, like you said, there's this interaction where he's talking with the counselor, which sets up his character themes of, I want to be with family and I don't want to be abandoned. So
right.
He's really micromanaging everybody.
But it's also like they don't tease. And I think that's like one of the main criticisms that I have about the film is that it's such a relatable human like experience that a lot of people can have. But they didn't flesh it out as much as they could have. And I feel like that was just a really big missed opportunity. And I feel like
100%.
More scenes where we kind of like would have like seen that. And there's like a bunch of ways they could have done it. But I think that if they had like fleshed that out a little bit more and kind of seen more of that throughout the film, I think it would have really made his character growth a lot more compelling. Cause I feel like that was also something that's missing.
Especially when like, whenever I've talked with people about the first one, they really like the adoption through line of the film. Like
yes,
they really enjoy
that
it.
That was so powerful.
And also the comfortability to just kind of be, not, I wouldn't say a mean-spirited film, but the fact that his parents did not care about him is mean.
Yes.
And
oh
I think
my
that
gosh.
That's good because that's kind of, the film is also, has this through line of who is worthy to have these powers. It's like, as Christians, we know nobody is worthy of kindness. And yet we are given it mercifully. And that's just really wonderful. And so, but you had asked, did I find the beginning of the film scary? I have a very high tolerance for fear, but I did see it as a scary scene and I enjoyed what was being done. I think Sandberg is good at making scares. Animal Creation has some genuinely good stuff. I think that's pretty freaky and good. Like I mentioned, Shazam, the boardroom scene is a freaky scene. It is like the 2010s version of the, although not nearly as scary, but the 2010s version of the Dr. Octopus murder scene.
Oh my gosh, one of my favorite scenes. So, like, period.
I mean, it's wild.
It's so good. When I saw that, just like a quick comment about that. When I saw that in the theater, I was like, is this a superhero movie? Because I'm really scared. It was so terrifying, so, but it looked so cool at the same time. Like, it was just, I just thought it was great.
And you can tune into an episode we did before No Way Home, where me and Dan went through actually all three Raimi movies and then all three Mark Webb movies. But we spend a good amount of time talking about that scene and why works so well. It's like so necessary and effective. But very much, I talked to Kat about this and I said, Sandberg seems like a director who watched a good amount of Raimi movies, obviously a good amount of horror movies because he loves the genre, but a lot of Raimi and I would say John Carpenter movies too, because he likes to focus on, he likes ground level and focusing on simple things. There's a lot of times where the camera will follow objects as they're impacted, or in a very small scene, he'll then focus on like a Randy for a period. And you get to see how that Randy is affected by the events of the scene or the catastrophe. And I think that's all really good stuff. But I can see why people are pretty mid about the movie. We are coming off the heels of Ant-Man Quantumania, which of course is Marvel, but it is a big spectacle thing, which this was way better than Quantumania, by far. Yeah, this Quantumania is rough.
I haven't seen it yet, but I believe you.
Yeah, it's just long, and like it just needed to be more fun. You can tune into that. I think it was two episodes ago, three. I know the Oscar episode or the best of episodes are between this and that, but we're coming off of that. I think we're also coming off of I mentioned this in the Quantumania one, but Marvel had six projects last year, three movies, three shows, and then like I said, Hawkeye had just finished in 2021, and so like people were probably watching that in January, so essentially seven projects. DC has Black Adam, Sony Marvel does Morbius, which is like, what the heck? I know, man. It's like, and like,
talk about
so
rough.
I think people are just exhausted. I think it's just like,
yeah,
these like there was a point in this where I was like, these effects are cool, I like the electricity, it's fake Philly, but I like the Philly stuff. But it's it's just at some point I was like, all right, I'm ready to go home. Like
it's real. The fatigue is real, man. It's bad.
Yeah. The fatigue, not the film. I like the movie. But,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I agree. I thought the film was okay. I didn't hate it. And it's definitely not like on my worst list, like by any means. I definitely think it could have been better, but it's just I only watched it because we were going to talk about it. If I'm going to be honest, I could have waited, I think, to have watched this.
Yeah, you're not a superhero person.
Not anymore. I used to be. Yeah, I loved the films that first came out. Like ever since I saw Iron Man, I was like, I am in this. I am down for this ride. Give me another movie and then another one.
Down to clown.
Oh, Daredevil TV show. Like there's just like there was just so many great things that were happening.
Yeah.
But I reached a point and I'm trying to like think of when exactly I started to feel tired. And I think it started after Endgame. I think I was
just
so
gonna
pumped
ask if it was that, yeah.
All the way up to Endgame. Endgame, I felt like, and I know that we've talked about it, how people have different opinions about Endgame. I personally loved it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I had a nice little like bow like on like right on the top of like this beautiful gift that is like this Marvel franchise. I'm like,
yeah,
ding. You know, it's like, or just like a nice little, maybe a better analogy would be just like a nice little period on the end. I was like, we can end right here and I don't need anything else. But I was still willing to like check out a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I just felt like from that point moving forward, things started to decline. There was still like some good material. Like I enjoyed Black Widow. And watching, what is it called? The Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness the second time. I did enjoy it the second time more than I did the first. So there's certain things that are like okay, but then just other things that just got really bad. Like I didn't enjoy Moon Knight and I really, really wanted to. Mm-hmm. It had such an amazing like first like pilot episode.
Yes, I thought it was all the time.
Phenomenal. It was yes. so good. I was like, wow, here we go. I'm back in it. I'm ready to do this. And then you get to the end and it just leaves you wanting. Like it or it just it was so disappointing. And I've just slowly just more and more have just and gotten over it. And now I'm really just over it. I'm like, I am not jumping out of my seat to see the next superhero film just because the quality has really diminished and it is just a lot of the same people with superpowers doing really cool things, but also like, you know, pulling at your heartstrings. And I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but it happened. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like it just, you just get exhausted after a while. So I can see why people would see Shazam 2 and just be very underwhelmed
and just be like,
but I do feel like it was still interesting, and I did still enjoy some of the characters.
Enjoying this episode? Grab that share link and tell your friends. Word of mouth is the most effective way for a podcast to reach new listeners, so don't be shy. Share the episode wherever you can.
Actually, Melvin, I did have a question for you.
Oh, okay.
How did you feel about Zachary Levi as Shazam in this film compared to the last film? Like, do you feel like he was a little too much with like the, I'm a teenager and I don't know how to do anything?
Sure.
Or did you feel like he may have played it up too much, or do you feel like it was okay? Like, what was your take on that?
Something I found interesting between both of these movies was that I actually felt that, I remember feeling this about the first film, that Jack Dylan Grazer, so that's the brother with the crutch. He's a great actor. I think he's fantastic.
Definitely.
He's put to death ego, and his ability to perform is very good. And then Asher Angel, who plays Billy Batson, I felt is noticeably not as daring in his performance as Jack Dylan Grazer.
Yeah.
And I think that is the juxtaposition against Zachary Levi, who, again, has put to death the ego and I think is very capable of doing what he does. And I think that causes a disparity between what feels like two different characters when really I want them to feel like the same character.
Yeah.
And I think there are ways to combat that difficulty. Like you have characters, you have actors who are playing the same character go out and like learn each other's tics or mm-hmm. learn each other's, like what are each other's acting strengths and weaknesses so that you can build this character together to be mm-hmm. something to unify it. And that's difficult. I genuinely had a movie in mind that was perfect for that. I can't remember. It was Honey Boy, I think, where the character who plays the Shia LaBeouf figure is two people. And I can't remember their names, but they're both good actors. And they did that. They went out. And that movie is noticeably cut down to 90 minutes. And the older equivalent doesn't have as much screen time, but it's still there. Whereas in this, there's much more Zachary Levi than Asher Angel. And then also Zachary Levi is very bombastic and animated and expressive in a way that Asher Angel's Billy Batson is not. It's very noticeable in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think it's like really obvious. And that's a bummer because I feel like all the other actors who are much less complicated characters actually at least get their pairings a little better.
Specifically
the purple one. I don't know.
Yes, I was just going to say that Megan Good as like superhero Darla, she does, I think, out of everyone, the best job.
She's so charismatic. She's so fun.
Yeah, like being Darla, but taller.
Yes. Yeah.
And faster. Like she talks like her, and even like the way she like moves her shoulders and will just like have like those pauses. I'm like, that's exactly what you want to see. And I feel like even between Jack Dylan Grazer, that's his name, like him and Adam Brody, like even just like Freddie, that's the name.
They were
the,
closer.
The character.
Yes, yeah. Freddie.
They
Freddie
were also like
closer
slightly
too.
Like closer. Whereas I feel that Zachary Levi is like doing a lot with like his hands and his body and like, yo,
yes.
like
yes.
I'm just, you know, being a superhero. But then when you look at Asher Angel, he's like very timid.
Yes, timid and is such a good word. Yeah.
Like, he's just, like, there isn't a lot of personality. I mean, like, he sits there and he's playing video games in the film and whatnot, but you don't see that same spark of personality. And I was wondering, like, maybe
or
you could justify... Or leadership. Yeah, like, maybe you could justify and say, oh, well, he just feels more confident when he's Shazam. But it's just so drastically different that it is. It makes Zachary look like he's doing too much.
All the work. Yeah.
It's not a good thing. Yeah. Or that he's trying to act too much like a goofy teenager.
It's the sort of thing where if they were united in their performance, I think then Levi's performance wouldn't be so at risk of being a negative. Like it wouldn't
Yeah,
be,
I think
like,
so too.
What could be considered maybe annoying to some people if Asher Angel's particular interpretation of Billy Batson was much more animated, but it's just not. It actually feels like Jack Dylan Grazer is then turning into Zachary Levi because Jack Dylan Grazer is very animated and all over. And so,
I definitely
saw it and I was feeling it. And then at some point I was like, whatever.
You get over it, whatever.
but it would be something whereas if for some reason Shazam survives and continues into the new DC canon, which I would like, then that could be something that they could personally work on and try to improve. And there is significantly less Asher Angel in this one in general. There's not as much as there was in the previous film. It's a bummer because it's noticeable, and I'm sure it's also probably something people are giving negatives about. I'm sure most of the negatives are probably predicated on just the I would almost say like things that aren't as creative or not creative. I should say original, because this film also does feel a little tired too. Not as tired as Black Adam. That was very tired and tiring. But this one, I think if you like certain superhero movies, you'll enjoy it. And even on Rotten Tomatoes, like it's 87% audience score. Like there is a disparity between audiences and critics right now. Critics who are seeing all of these and then constantly are watching movies in general. And then you have audiences who probably only go out and see these every couple, you know, months and are just happy to see another superhero movie because they just saw Quantumania and maybe didn't like it, or just saw Quantumania and liked it and now want to go see Fury of the Gods and are going to like it too. But hey there, listener. Want to influence the podcast? Head on over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine and support the show for $3 a month. In doing so, you'll be able to vote on a movie poll that picks a film we discuss each month. So jump on over there and have your voice heard. I think the only superhero thing moving forward that I am interested in is Invincible Season 2. I don't think there's anything else I'm interested in. Invincible was so good.
I can see that.
So amazing.
It was very solid.
And it was so emotionally effective that, like,
yes,
people on the podcast know if I think about the ending,
of course,
start crying. So like, there are literally episodes where me and Dan would talk about it, and I would start welling up, and I'm like, I gotta stop. Like it was just like I find
it
so touching and powerful, and like,
yes,
it's just so beautiful. And so I'm really excited for that. But like when I think of like The Flash. When I think of Aquaman, I'm excited because I like James Wan, and it's been too long since his last movie, and I want to, which because Malignant was great, and I want him to get back to horror too. But and then I'm thinking, like, do I even care about Marvel much right now? Like, the Marvels is one of the next ones, and I don't care about Captain Marvel. Miss Marvel I like, but Captain Marvel I'm not interested in. And then there's like, what's the other one? There's some other Marvel movie coming out that I'm just not even remembering. And it's like this.
I don't even know anymore.
I'm so
out of the loop.
I think the zeitgeist is just changing. I think people aren't they're not into this, you know?
And there is such a thing as too much. I feel like they're trying to take something and just drag it out as long as possible. And this is what I know maybe from a marketing standpoint or from a movie making standpoint, like behind the scenes, maybe this is a bad idea. But just as a humble viewer of films, I think I would have just preferred the whole, like Marvel, just talking about Marvel, you have this whole franchise, you finish at Endgame, take a break, and then roll out these films a lot more slowly. And I know that for some people who are like, oh my gosh, I gotta see the next one, and like people get obsessive, but there is such a thing as too much, especially at the, you know, at the expense of quality. I would rather wait 2 years, 3 years, like however many years for a good quality superhero film, especially because you've given me time to like want it. You know, it's like when you're like when you can like I'll give you a small example. Like I love Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I don't know if you love it. But my favorite flavor is Netflix and chilled because it's got like peanut butter and all this really good stuff. So there was a season where I was eating that all the time. And then now I don't even want it anymore because it's just so easily. I mean, it's still a good ice cream.
Yeah.
But the craving is gone. I'm kind of over it because I just had too much of it, too much back to back, like almost all the time I'm eating this ice cream. And so I feel like it's the same with these superhero movies. Like if you have just so many films coming around back to back to back, it's just so readily available. And then the quality starts to diminish and you just lose your desire for them anymore. But I feel like if you had spaced it out, given us that time to like build up our desire for it again, I think either we and give yourself time to make something good. I just think things would just be a lot better. But again, I'm sure they have their reasons why they're doing it this way. I just, again, from an audience perspective, I would have preferred to wait.
Yeah, like you, there's something about what's going on now in this age of like streaming and normalization of geekdom where it's just too much. Cause like I'm off the Star Wars train. I've been off that. And like, I know Mando season 3 is coming out right now and I'm sure it's good. But the fact that like, there's stuff I won't understand because I didn't watch Book of Boba Fett, which I do not want to watch. I'm not actively frustrated about that, but I'm very disappointed that like I have to, I quote unquote have to, like, I don't have to, that's the beauty of it. Right. I can just not, right. And I'm not, but like, I would have to, if I want to understand it more, I have to go into that. Now some media, you don't have to do that, but it can be benefited of it. But that's sort of the thing that's why I'm so comfortably against like DC saying we want to connect our movies, shows, our animated stuff and our video games, because like, sometimes I don't want to consume all of this stuff. Like I have other things I want to do. Like I enjoy watching movies, but I also like playing video games. And even just recently I've been like, thanks to Bell exposing me to even though I didn't enjoy that.
Aww,
it reminded me of anime I like. And so now I'm like reading manga that I have, and I'm getting back into a show that I really, really enjoy. That I really, really absolutely love. And so to go and just like read these things again. So I just have other stuff I want to do. And that's on top of the like non-consumer related stuff I want to do, which is like go outside. I like to go thrifting. I found that I really enjoy cleaning shoes. So I've been doing that. And so like there's all these other things I want to do. And so like if Star Wars, which barely has content coming out, isn't getting my attention.
Yeah.
How is any of this stuff going to like DC wants to have its own canon, but then it also wants to do its own Batman canon with Robert Pattinson that also may kind of possibly have a Penguin spinoff that I'm not so sure may happen now. I don't know. And then there's also the Joker canon, which is its own thing, which is like, I'm genuinely interested in that because it's like a musical. So cool.
Sounds fun.
But like, I'm done. Like I one of the reasons, so we have Patreon supporters will know this already because of the Patreon poll, but we're doing a new format on the show called Party Pleasers, where we're going to talk about movies from beginning to end and talk about them. We've already done episodes like this, but we're now making an official thing.
Party Pleasers.
Part of it is so that like we don't have to always be doing stuff that's coming out, which also frees us from always having to do superhero movies.
Yes.
Because, like, I don't want to do this anymore.
It's just so discouraging at this point. Yeah. It's really just not a good use of time anymore.
Do you find that you'll leave the theater with a headache after these movies sometimes?
Not a headache, but I just find myself, like, I'm not even angry. Because, like, I feel like to be angry, you have to care enough about the film to, like, be disappointed. So
that's why you left Morbius so mad, because you were like, I really wanted this movie to be good.
Thankfully, I didn't see it in the theater. Thankfully.
Did you see it at all?
Because
it's
I did. I did watch it. It's absolutely terrible.
So sorry.
Yeah. So I think I was only – but Black Adam in particular made me angry because I feel like The Rock, you know, Dwayne Johnson lied to me. And then, because on his social media, everyone loves this film. It's so great. I'm like, you're a liar.
You're a liar.
But I know you're doing your job. You're trying to sell a movie.
The Rock Johnson lied? He sinned against me? I can't believe it. He's the rock I stand on. I cannot believe this.
Definitely not. But I think I was just so upset because I actually did love two of the characters. Like, I loved the Hawkman and I loved Dr. Fate. Mm-hmm. So I was just really excited to see them. And I felt like as good as they looked, they just weren't they weren't given any justice, you know? It just wasn't like, it wasn't done
there's
as
no
well
justice
as I hoped it would
in this
be.
League of America.
No, there's
what's
nothing.
Going on?
So leaving Shazam, I didn't really have a headache. Because I actually didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was okay.
Hey, hey, hey. We have some Patreon goals we're trying to reach. If we get enough support, we'll review each God's Not Dead movie, as well as The Inhumans, that really bad Marvel show from a couple years ago. Head over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine and share your support.
What did you think of the Daughters of Atlas? As villains, what did you think of them?
I thought they were fine. I didn't think they were terrible. I thought for at least the final act, Lucy Liu looked out of place. As she's riding this dragon, I was like, I don't think she knows what to do. like not because she's a bad actor and not because David Sandberg isn't giving her good direction, but just because what's happening is so silly. And going to be so cleaned up in post-production that like with special effects, which I guess is during production at this point, because there's so many effects people have to do. It's just like, she just looked not real. But I didn't dislike them. I think it was pretty clear that I guess you've been listening for 40 minutes, I think at this point. So we'll call it spoilers, but, one of the sisters is, ostensibly younger, although still 6,000 years old or 6 million years old, but
yes,
still cradle robbing. But she was such a manic pixie dream girl that you're like, well, she's either going to die or they're going to make a joke about this or she's going to be a villain. She ends up being one of the sisters as a villain.
Right.
Because she just loves everything Jack Dylan Grazer's doing, but Jack Dylan Grazer is not being a creep, just weird. And so it's like, no woman would like any of the things he's doing. Like, they might care about him as a human being who is being bullied, but they're not going to be like,
you never know, Melvin. Some girls do like the awkward, you know, teenage boy. But the fact that she's, maybe she's 6,000 years old, but she hasn't progressed past her teenage mind. I don't know. It didn't make any sense.
She has had no other human interaction except for her sisters.
It's a little weird, but anyway.
But I didn't dislike them. I thought they were fine. They were serviceable. I like that they were all in disagreement. I pretty much knew like from the get-go with the way Chaos was functioning. I don't remember the particular. I just remember her ability. But I remember that Chaos was like very clearly beneath the lead, Helen Mirren.
Hespera.
Hespera. But I was like, she'll probably get the upper hand or something. And that happens. So very like comfortably predictable movie, but not in a bad way. But what I liked was that like just how they were used was competently and I think had fun ways. Like they were good antagonists to the hero's journey, but they weren't anything to write home about. But that's fine, because like Black Adam just fought like the devil, which is boring. So
right.
And it was so like I was totally fine with this, and I like the aesthetic of Shazam's world and heroes, that they're like just like deities of other worlds or like demons. So yeah, they were fine. How about you? Were you kind of like iffy about it, or just?
I really liked them. I mean, I kind of figured that Anthea was eventually going to be like the sister, the third sister. I'm like, oh, maybe there's three, not two. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm such a huge fan of Helen Mirren. I love so many of the films that she's done. Mm-hmm. And I especially love that she's in my guilty pleasure, the Fast and the Furious movies, but she just does it so well. Cause that's what I love about her. She can do these like super serious, traumatic roles, and then she can just have fun. And so I feel like this was a movie where she was just having fun, but I found her just to be so interesting.
Oh, that means that there's a pretty clear metatextual joke. Cause he's saying he's seen all the Fast and Furious movies. So he would have seen her. That's pretty funny.
He would have seen her in there. Yeah.
You mean you've seen all of them and you don't recognize her?
It's like she doesn't remind you of somebody. No, that's good. I liked that there was also like division between them. You can kind of see it like in the beginning, because like Calypso goes to grab the staff and then Hespera like grabs her hand and's like, I go first.
Yeah. That's my
end. And I even just liked the, like how they're sisters, but they have different personalities, as sisters do.
Yeah.
You know, so you have the older sister, the younger sister, the middle child syndrome that is Calypso. Yeah, and so, and how just they had different visions of how things were going to turn out. So I kind of liked that. I was hoping that there would be like something like that, just to make the villains a little bit more interesting. And so I really enjoyed that dynamic. But yeah, I thought they were decent villains. Again, definitely not like the most fearsome or terrifying, but I found the other guy in the first film a lot scarier than these three sisters, but maybe they weren't meant to be scary, but just like, get out of our way. We want to get our powers back, save our world. And I do like the fact that you do wonder, like I kind of get where they're coming from, like their power of their people and of their own father was taken from them and now is being used by teenagers. So I can totally get like why they would be like really, really frustrated and upset. I was actually also going to ask you, what did you think about, can we talk about the end? Because I am curious.
Yes, we have to do this. There's no way.
How you thought. Sorry.
Oh, I mean, it's bad.
Like your thoughts on the end. Could you like do like just summarize it for us before we talk about it?
Yeah, okay. So let me open up the dictionary definition of the word bad. And oh, it's just the final scene of Shazam 2. It's wild. I can't believe it. Man. I'm sorry, Sandberg, but maybe it was out of your control, but this ending is bad. It is. So, okay. So to wrap up the movie, Billy Batson heroically sacrifices himself to defeat Lucy Liu's sister god villain. And it's a good scene. Like if I had thought they were going to commit to it, like I probably would have bought into it. But
yeah,
one of the last trailers I saw for this movie, which surprised me because it seemed like the sort of scene you would put in an earlier trailer, but it was almost like a scene. It was almost like a trailer you like put at the end because you were like embarrassed of it. But basically in this last trailer, Wonder Woman's in it. And I was like, what? I didn't know. Like, why wouldn't you advertise that for Wonder Woman stands, all six of them that are out there? So like, why don't they just like,
hey,
it's not six, that you're included.
Listen, the first one was good.
It's you still a bigger.
Just I like throw her in one. The garbage just because the second film was terrible. But go ahead, continue.
I thought the first one was fun too. And I think the second one is fun to watch because it's funny because it's bad. But
it is terrible.
And it's like, it is wild. That movie is wild. But it just seems surprising to me. And because Wonder Woman hadn't shown up in the movie, I was like, oh, I think I know what's going to happen. And so
gotcha.
They bury Billy Batson. And then Wonder Woman comes out of nowhere and revives him. And I guess Wonder Woman, who can also fly for no reason in the last movie, can now also revive dead people. When in Justice League Snyder Cut, it took a whole thing to make Superman come back to life. And maybe someone will say that that's because he's, I was about to say Klingon, but that's not correct. It's Kryptonian. It's bad. It's a serious cop out. And not only that, but a character who is a god, I think her name's Rachel Ziegler. Her character, had lost their god powers, but then just gets them back too. And so Wonder Woman coming in like that just was really, I mean, it was bad. Like, they play up the music, they make it seem like it's awesome. It's the exact opposite of it. I just recently heard on an episode of the Flophouse, Elliot Kalin was mentioning that there used to be kind of this old Hollywood idea that, like, an actor performs a character, but the way the audience engages them is, even if it's a different character in each movie, they still see them as, like, the same character in each film. So they'll respond to them as the same, and they'll react to them as the same, even if they're playing a little differently. And I think that theory is kind of true. Now, they took it really seriously. They would pay actors to get divorces or to break up with people because they felt that made them more marketable, as if they were single. So Hollywood, you know, do be wild, as the whole world do be wild, as your two hosts are. That's why we need Christ. Yeah. But in this particular case, Gal Gadot coming in, I'm just not a fan of her. And so it just, like, became even more frustrating that she was the one who essentially is like, I was thinking, like, I really hope she doesn't show up and save the day, because then it takes the movie away from the characters that we actually are watching the movie for.
Right.
And so she just comes in and revives them and then gives the powers back to this one deity. And I was like, but I wanted to see the next movie where, like, they're trying to bring back Shazam or trying to survive, and then they realize, and maybe that would be too much like Snyder Cut, where, like, or just Justice League, where, like, they need to bring back the hero. But, like, it would have been interesting to see Shazam be the other heroes, and then also this god who can't maybe do all the crazy Axis powers they have, but thinks of other ways to do powers, like, kind of like the transition of Barbara Gordon into Oracle. And so, like, I really, like, and I know none of this would happen because the canon's changing anyway, but it sucked. But I've said enough. What did you think of this ending that is the exact definition of bad?
it was just, I know this sounds bad, but I would have just preferred him to be dead.
Yes.
Yeah, like, just to, dead. But the thing is that I had issues with him being dead, not just because I wanted him to be alive, but because I felt like there were things that should have happened before that to make his death more compelling. Yes. So it's like, if you're going to kill him, if he's going to die a hero, there needs to be some kind of character growth or just something that would just make that more memorable or more meaningful for you to, like, really feel that sadness. I felt sad because I was really moved by Jack Dylan Grazer's performance.
He's so good.
Marta.
Oh my word.
Marta Milans. She plays the mom.
The mom.
Like, just it was just so compelling. Seeing, like, their emotional reaction to his death. And it was sad. And then when he wasn't, like, coming back, I was like, oh, snap. Like, they're really just going to let him die. Like, I was like,
they're gonna
that's
do it.
Insane. And then, because I didn't see the trailer with Wonder Woman, so her getting on the screen was actually a surprise for me. So I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And I kind of get why they brought her and why her touching the staff would, like, bring him back to life, because she's the last of the gods that has, like, power. But it's questionable because it's like,
is she? I can't remember. I know she fights a god in her first movie.
Yeah, no, but she's the last of the gods, because in the first film with in her first film, she has this sword that she thinks is the god killer, and she's trying to kill Ares, But then right. she realizes that the sword isn't the weapon, that she is the weapon because she is the daughter of Zeus.
Oh, yeah.
So that's right. why okay, she yeah. has like the lightning and the thing with the bangles and like she's able to destroy Ares. So when mm-hmm. Ares dies, there's really no more gods left because her mother's not a god. Her mother's an Amazon. So mm-hmm. She's only half. She's not like full. But I guess it counts because she's able to use the staff and
man, that's,
bring him back to life.
I mean, I guess it can't be blamed for forgetting something from a movie in 2016, though. So I feel innocent, fine. But she's totally fine.
Yeah. So wow. I kind of love the first Wonder Woman. That's the only reason why I remember it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, don't forget, there's a lot of fun content missing from this episode because you're not listening on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine and support for $3 a month to gain access to uncut episodes with upwards of 40 minutes of bonus content each. You'll thank me later.
I just wish that his death had made more sense or Wonder Woman's interaction had been better explained. And I know that we talk about like not over-explaining things, but I don't know. It just... It didn't go well together. I feel like it was a bad cameo, like a bad connection or like thing to try to make happen. And then, again, like Zachary Levi, right? He like has this interaction with Wonder Woman, like the woman of his dreams, literally, which I will say that scene
it's pretty funny.
With Digimon Honsu. Is that how you, I always pronounce it. Like he, that was probably one of the funniest parts of the whole movie. Just good. Having his head on her body so he can like
it's just freaky.
Talk to Billy and give him a message.
Yeah, that was good.
Oh my gosh, I loved it so much. No, it was great. And so, the ending wasn't very good. And I kind of wish that. And then if you're not sure how to make it happen, then don't have it happen. Have him survive somehow or have him come back to life in a different way.
Or in another movie or something like that.
Or in another movie. I think just sometimes there's like this fear of committing to something, you know, or you feel like you have to have the surprise cameo or you have to have the added ending, which by the way, was a huge waste of time. I don't know if you stuck around to watch the extra scene that they threw in there. There was
two. I don't know if you knew about the second one, but
what was the second one?
So as is familiar with these movies, there's some end credits ones, one of which is that Shazam is being invited to the Justice Society, which is not the Justice League, whatever, probably won't come to fruition at all. And then the second one is the I don't know his name because I don't know comics that well, but there's Mark Strong, who survived from the last movie without Shazam powers. He's in prison, and then that worm that is in the first Shazam, who's locked away and
I forget
the worm's name, but he's known in the comics for basically being one of the most evil things ever. So it's like he commits genocide, is a horrible monster, like just a terrible thing. And so they play up that like the worm is planning something and he has one more thing to do. But the reason it takes so long is because he's a worm and he has to crawl. So he like, it's a little funny, but, and so Mark Strong's like, can't you like let me out now though? So, but again, like these things aren't going anywhere. So it just seems like, a total and complete waste of time. It feels again like whenever you watch Amazing Spider-Man 2 and there's the end stinger with like the guy in the hat and he's building the Sinister Six and it's like, well, that's not going anywhere. So it doesn't matter. And it's just, I don't know.
It's a total waste of time.
Complete waste of time. So at the end of it, it's just like, whatever. Like, I guess I'll just, never watch these movies again because they don't matter.
Right. And again, like you said, if they're going to be revamping everything, then it kind of just like not. But and then that's the upsetting thing. Like people have invested so much of their time, so much of their resources, so much of their energy into these characters, whether they believed in it or not. Like a lot of people really tried, you know, to like bring these things to life. And then you're just going to be like, you know what?
we're just going to do the whole thing over again. It's kind of like when there was a rumor floating around that they were going to redo all the Harry Potter films.
I remember that. Yeah.
I wanted to kill someone. I was like, I don't know who I need to, like, whose house I need to go to and tell them, like,
it's like, why bother?
You're not doing this. It's so, to me, I think it's also just really offensive I'm talking about Harry Potter, to all the actors and the cast and everyone who just invested so, like, basically half their lives to making these films. And they're not bad films. I think they're some of them are great. Some of them are okay, but they're all well made, and the actors, all of them, do a fantastic job. So it's like, that doesn't need to be redone just because you feel like it, or just because you're trying to milk some more money out of it. It's just like,
Warner Brothers is desperate for, like, something consistent and safe.
And I think they're going to get,
it's just not working.
Yeah. I think they're going to get less. Like, I think people are just going to be more upset with them if they try to do something like that. And I know that a new project is a risk. And again, I'm sure there's a lot more factors than I could possibly know about, but yeah, trying to kind of just start from scratch, I just don't know if it's worth it. I really don't. Shazam 2, I think would be fun to stream. So if you have, like, a streaming service and it comes out to stream for free, then I would go ahead and give it a shot. I'm always a believer in, like, people just watching stuff for themselves. Like, make up your own mind, because I know that what I love, someone else might absolutely hate, and vice versa. So, but I do think that it was okay. I don't think it was the worst superhero film by far. But definitely it is a good time.
Very good streaming. Definitely worth renting too, I think, if you want to keep up with Shazam. If you have to go to the movies for some reason, someone puts a gun to your head and says, go see a movie, and you have to choose between Ant-Man and Shazam, pick Shazam. Because if you choose Ant-Man, they'll just shoot you anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, my goodness.
So don't do that. Wrong answer.
Who are these people, Melvin?
I don't know. These people in my mind, they're very violent and scary.
Oh, my goodness.
I still take them out to coffee sometimes. I don't know. And I tell them the everything bagel's great, but I don't know. I think they don't think it'll make them calm. But anyways, it's a good movie. It's a bummer that this episode is laden with such, like, I don't know, passive exhaustion. But it really, it really isn't Shazam 2's fault. I think Shazam 2, if it came out and there had not been, like, 9 superhero movies last year,
right?
I think this movie would have come out and been much more appreciated and enjoyed. But it is it's a good time. You won't walk out of it. You won't want to walk out of it like Black Adam. You won't think it's terrible like Morbius, but you also won't get fun memes like Morbius. But it is what it is. Did you know Cinematic Doctrine has a blog? Visit cinematicdoctrine.com to read extended thoughts on movies or movie industry news from our contributors. Plus, you can find our podcast on there too. Recommendations. What kind of recommendation do you have, Melanie?
It's a franchise, because I guess we're talking about franchises. And this is one that I don't think will ever get old for me. Mm-hmm. And that's Lord of the Rings. I just think if you haven't seen them, you're missing out.
The three movies?
All three. I think I know people have their beef with some of them being too long. Some people will say, if you haven't watched the extended versions, you haven't really watched it, blah, blah, blah. But all that to say, I think the Lord of the Rings franchise is fantastic. I think that it's great for people of all ages. If you scare easy, then maybe some of the fighting orc scenes might be a little terrifying. And I'm more thinking of, like, younger children. But it's just a film about a young hobbit, a character in the film. His name is Frodo Baggins, who is someone who is very humble and has lived a very secluded life, is kind of thrust into this epic, and I mean epic, adventure.
So
it's very, very just simple, like clear-cut good and evil, and just so many wonderful characters. So I feel like when we talk about good storytelling, you have and again, I won't get into all of it, but you just have these wonderful characters who go through so many changes, so many trials, and overcome so much. It's also very encouraging. There's just, I was rewatching some of this the other day, and even I think yesterday. And it's just like, I was just so moved by so many things, because as an adult, you kind of just look at it differently than you did when you first watched it. Like for me, I was always just like fighting scenes, elves, bows and arrows, like, yeah. But then as an adult, like you think about, there's themes about life and death and what's beyond that. There's, again, good versus evil, overcoming hardship, loyalty and togetherness. So when you think about friendship, I always think about Sam and his friendship to Frodo and just how beautiful it was and how profound throughout the whole film. And it's just great. And I know some people aren't into like fantasy adventures, but if you haven't seen it yet, you've never given it a chance, I highly,
totally worth it.
Highly, highly recommend it. I think it's just, you know, do one movie a day. If need be, one movie a week even, but it's just worth it. It's such a beautiful, beautiful journey. So I highly recommend
it. Yeah, and you can ghost the Hobbit movies.
Yeah, I mean, I had fun watching them, but they're not, that's just not as good as the original Lord of the Ring films.
I am going to recommend not necessarily a movie or anything, but it is movie related. I've recommended in the past going to thrift stores because you can find some good old DVDs, like hard to find movies and stuff like that. And I still think that's a good idea, but I'm going to add a bonus to that, which is check the Blu-rays and see if they still have the digital codes with them. Because people never use them. And I have gotten a ton of movies physically that then also still have the digital code.
That's such a good idea. I would have never thought of that. Crazy.
So I tested it out one day because I went and there was a copy of Interstellar, which I think is okay. I don't think it's a very good Nolan movie, but I think it's an okay movie. But the slip was in there and I was like, let me just try this. And if it works, I'll buy it. Like, cause it wouldn't be, that would be stealing if I did, but I wanted to see if it worked. And I typed it in my Vudu and the code worked. So I had Interstellar in my Vudu digital account and I went, okay, I'm putting this on my, I'm going to buy this. And Blu-rays at thrift stores can be really cheap. I get them for like $3, but the real winner was I found Fast and Furious, a collection 1 through 7.
Awesome. On Blu-ray
for $9, and then all of the codes in it worked. So I now just have 1 through 7 on digital, which is otherwise like hundreds of dollars.
I'm so jealous, so. Melvin. I hate you, but I really don't hate you.
It's wild. I'll definitely lend you my Vudu. It's fine, but
no, because I bought all the films.
Many. Oh, okay. Keep hating, hater. It's crazy. Like,
So I didn't buy all the films, but I bought my favorites, and I just feel like I can't believe you got so many of them so cheap. I'm so frustrated.
I'm opening it up right now. I'm gonna open up my movies. I got How to Train Your Dragon 2. I got Spider-Man: Far From Home, Fast 1 through 7, Breakthrough, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Shrek 2, Dark Shadows.
Cool.
Yeah, and then Interstellar. So like, and not all these movies are great. Like, I also got Blumhouse's Truth or Dare, but like, still, like, it's kind of crazy to me how people don't use these. And I think it's kind of cool. So I've been telling everybody.
And also, maybe
this,
some people just don't know that they're there or know how to use them.
Yes, exactly. And
I'd believe that for sure.
Because not every movie is worth keeping on a shelf, but it is nice to have access to a lot of movies. And so,
definitely.
I've been enjoying that. And Trek 2 was dope to be able to get that as well. So, love that. So,
nice. That's a great one.
My very strange recommendation, getting Blu-rays with the digital codes because they're probably going to work anyway. So, thanks so much for checking out this episode of Cinematic Doctrine. If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving a review and subscribing to the podcast. And as mentioned before, Cinematic Doctrine has a Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you're opted into a once-a-month movie poll where you decide a movie we discuss on the podcast. There are other unique benefits that come with supporting the podcast, so be sure to check that out at patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine. A special shout out to those who support at the Art House Theater tier on Patreon. Thank you so much, Mom, Dad, Melanie, Sherlion, and Thomas. You guys are the best, and your continued monetary support is greatly appreciated. Until next time, stay cool. Want some Cinematic Doctrine swag? You're in luck. We've got 3-inch Cinematic Doctrine logo stickers exclusive for Patreon supporters. Perfect for your travel mug or laptop. Head over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine, link in the show notes, and choose the independent theater tier. Doing so will net you other perks too. But let's be real, the podcast stickers are the coolest perk. So get yourself some podcast stickers by supporting on Patreon.